UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, Bob, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's show. It is great to have you stopping by. Our first of two guests is Nick from Michigan. Now, Nick's experiences occurred on a hospital ward. The patient next to his cubicle would often talk about aliens and how they would visit him. Nick immediately thought he was crazy until there was a visitor out of hours. And then we move on to Wolfgang in Oregon with his experiences of ET encounters, precognitive dreams, and several sightings of ghosts. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Hi, Nick. Nice to meet you.
It is great to have you join us today, Nick. And calling from Michigan?
Yes, I am. Mid-Michigan.
Great stuff. And your experience occurred in Tucson, Arizona in 2017?
Yeah. It happened shortly after I moved there. I moved to Tucson in November of 2016. And I ended up getting a job as a pizza delivery driver. And on Friday, it was actually Friday the 13th when this happened, in January of 2017, I had an accident. I had a seizure and I crashed headfirst into a wall. And I ended up getting a T12 L1 spinal cord injury with several broken bones and dislocations. And I ended up having to be in a hospital for 4 months. Most of it was in a rehab facility. And like, time kind of just blended together while I was there. So I may get some of the timeline details a little wrong because, you know, when you're in a hospital for 4 months, you know, just kind of blends together. But I do know that at the end of March, I had a roommate for 2 weeks who had suffered a heart attack. And like, he started talking about how aliens would abduct him and both physically and mentally, like frequently throughout his life. And, you know, me not being an experiencer at the moment just thought he was a crazy person. And his wife also worked at the facility and she would visit him and she would just, you know, say he wasn't kidding. It happens. And I still thought they were both nuts. I've always been like a seeing is believing kind of person, but I kind of entertained him, you know, listened to him more like half listening. And he said some interesting stuff, but also strange stuff. Like he said that they showed him what happens when you die and you don't really die. You just like write down your lesson in like a book, or maybe that was a metaphor or something. You just kind of chronicle some of the lessons you learned in that life and you move on to the next one. And that kind of sounds like reincarnation, like karma reincarnation type of stuff. And he also said there's like different types of existences and not all of them are physical. And there's different, you know, species of aliens is what he said. And not 100% sure what he meant by different types of existences, but I just, you know, went with it and just, yeah, listened. And my mom flew in from Michigan to visit me in the hospital for a little while and, you know, to keep me company while I was recovering because I was, you know, alone, basically, like 2,000 miles away from family, basically. So while she was there, I didn't really talk to my roommate that much, but she did hear some of the stuff he was saying, and she also thought he was nuts. But one night, I heard him mumbling, and the curtain between us was drawn, so I couldn't see him, and like I couldn't understand anything that he was saying. It was very quiet. I was like, nobody came in the room because I was closer to the door. You know, I would have seen somebody walk by, but I just, you know, carried on, just kept playing my game, and then I noticed this weird light that just glided over from his side of the room to my side of the room. And it just kind of hovered there in front of my bed for like, it seemed like a few seconds, and then it went back. And I don't know why I didn't say anything to him after I saw that, like, or that night, I should say. I didn't say anything that night to him. I was just like, that wasn't real. But so the next day I asked him who he was talking to. I didn't mention the orb at all. It was an orb. I should say that the orb, it was bright, but the light was contained. Like, the light wasn't escaping from the orb. It was only bright around the orb. It didn't light up the room like a, you know, a candle would or something like that, or a flashlight. So, yeah. And then the next day I asked him who he was talking to. It didn't mention the orb. And he just said, matter-of-factly, alien. And I told him I saw an orb of light, not aliens. And he said that's how they appear to him sometimes. And that he also said that they used to be called angels in ancient civilizations. And I don't know. I didn't really buy it. I still kind of just convinced myself that I didn't really see it and he was just making it up. But I mean, he said some other weird stuff after that, too. He told me that they were talking about me and that I would recover 75%, which I don't know if that means 75% of what I lost or I'll be 75% normal. There is a difference, but which I don't know how the thing would know that. Really, like, I am on track to getting close to 75% already. It's kind of weird. Like, I really am recovering quite a bit. He left the hospital not long after I experienced that. And, like, we didn't really talk a whole lot because my mom was there. Like, I don't know. I didn't really, like, I just really didn't talk about the orb. I don't know. At least for a while. But that's really, like, what I saw and what I was told by him. And I eventually started telling, like, my mom and my dad and some few friends, but I didn't really like make it common knowledge around my, you know, circle because I didn't want to be labeled that crazy person. I just, like, I know what I saw. I'm looking back on it and I know what I saw, and it wasn't anything I've ever seen before. And I just have to believe him because he was talking to it. I just don't get it. I mean, this past year, I've started really thinking about it, like, obsessing over it almost, but I just can't get it out of my head. I even ended up watching Ancient Aliens. I honestly do believe that most of the show is kind of this clickbait garbage, but there was an episode about these orbs, and they said they're, like, a mode of communication in the show, and I'm just like, oh my god, that's exactly what my roommate said, and I've also heard a lot of stories of these orbs on your podcast, too. Like, every time I hear about these orbs, my ears perk right up. It's just, it's amazing that I saw what I saw, and I can confirm it through other people's stories.
What kind of size are we looking at for this orb?
So this orb was probably about the size of like a volleyball or some, you know, it wasn't huge. It was, yeah, probably about a foot across. Yeah, it was small. And it was hovering about like 5 to 6 feet in the air.
It wasn't giving off any light. It was all contained within the orb itself.
Yeah, it was bright when you looked at it, but it didn't light up the room. It was not acting like normal light. I think about this a lot, and this is all just speculation, but it's almost like the gravity isn't letting the light escape that much. If that's how they do it, I really don't know. Or I don't know if, like, I've heard of quantum entanglement where you affect, I'm pretty sure that's what it's called, where you, if two things are connected, even if they're like a universe, like the whole entire universe away from each other, you do something to one and something happens to the other particle. Like, I don't know if they know how to manipulate that to be able to communicate vast distances without actually being there.
I'm sure they're capable of many things beyond our understanding.
Yeah. You know, I always believed that aliens existed, but I didn't think they were actually here, you know? But now I know that they're here, and I know other people see them all the time. And
a lot of the conversations are about them traveling vast distances, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the reality of it is that, yeah, people have had experiences with them for millennium, and they've been here a long time, and this is probably their home as well.
Yeah, I do think that. You think about the ocean. If they, like, they're coming out of the ocean sometimes, even the Go Fast video or whatever that was released by the U.S. Pentagon, like, that came out, the one with David Fravor, that came out of the water.
Exactly, yeah.
We don't really know what's in the whole ocean. We don't, you know, it's not like the land. We can't see it like we can see the land.
And it'd be an excellent place to hide, well, or an excellent place to be.
You know, I always knew Tucson was, like, a hot spot for, like, that type of activity. I was hoping I would see something, but I really didn't think I was going to see something. And then I saw something. Then it was at the tail end of my stay there. It was kind of like, it was like saying, yeah, we exist. Thanks for coming. You know?
And it's a shame you can reach out to this guy that was in the bed next to you.
Right. I don't know. I think I was just way too focused on myself at the moment because, you know, I just had a traumatic injury and then it was bad.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you're doing okay now?
Yeah, I'm able to walk a bit with braces on and a walker. I think my record is 1,100 feet without sitting down. So, and that's from, like, barely able to fully extend my leg. That's what I started with. I've recovered quite a bit.
Yeah, well, that's good on you. It takes time, doesn't it? It takes time to get back to normal again.
Yeah. Patience.
Patience, exactly. Yeah, don't overdo it. You know, you'll get there in the end.
Yep. If they really did know what was going to happen to me in the future, I'll take 75%, you know? That's better than nothing.
Of course it is, yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, and it's got you interested in orbs now, you know? And because, you know, I hear countless amounts of stories about orbs. They range in all different locations, you know, some floating around the woods somewhere, floating around people's houses.
I was actually listening to one of the podcasts and somebody, like, kind of explained the orbs like I saw. Like, they were in the woods, but they weren't, like, they were bright, but they weren't lighting up the woods. That really, like, rung a bell in my head for me. I'm like, yeah, that's how it is. And then that one woman from South Dakota, I think it was your first episode, she saw orbs all the time.
Tarita, yeah.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, she still does.
Yeah. I wish I could. I'm trying to figure out a way to, like, try to reach out to them. Like, I'm not sure if that one CE5 guy is legit or not, but I'm willing to try anything to try to communicate with these beings again. Because this one that I saw, I'm fairly certain it was a good one. And I do think there's good and bad ones, just like humans, you know?
I know a lot of people that do try it, and some people have more success than others. But it's something, you know, you can do, everyone can do, really. You don't have to go in the middle of a desert. You know, you can go out into your garden, you know, go into a field.
I do have a cabin in northern Michigan, and it's like there's clear skies there. And this next summer, I'm going to try it every single time I go up there. Like, and that's also, it's a pretty, I don't know, it's a cool place up there. There's northern lights, and it's actually, our cabin is 10 miles away from a military base. So that's kind of interesting.
So you get the northern lights up there. I bet that's beautiful.
Yeah, we actually have been recently. Like, I haven't actually seen the Northern Lights personally. I want to, but every time we have them, it seems like it's cloudy.
That's like the UK, that is.
Yeah.
Every time they've said they were going to come down further south down here, it's always been too cloudy to see anything.
Yeah, and that's how it is down here where I am in, like, mid-Michigan. We, like, don't ever get the northern lights, but we did last week, and I think it was last week or the week before, and it was cloudy. So it's like, of course.
It's very beautiful to see, but at the same time, you know, the planet is being bombarded by radiation. So
yeah, thank you, magnetosphere. I think that's what it is, the ionosphere.
But I think it'd be definitely worth traveling to somewhere like Iceland.
Oh yeah, I've always wanted to go there and go around the island, check out some waterfalls and volcanoes.
Very alien-looking land, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I was gonna tell the story of something my mom and dad experienced up near our cabin. So they both experienced this weird, I don't know what you would call it, a time glitch type of thing. They were driving down a road and it should have taken them 30 seconds, but they both looked at each other at the same time and said, "Why is it taking so long?" They said it felt like it took an hour. And I don't know if it's some sort of weird random time distortion. They both at the same time said it to each other.
It was only a short distance, was it?
Yeah, 30 seconds to a minute it should have taken. And it did take that long, but they both said it felt like it took a long time. And my parents are those no BS types of people. They're not really into paranormal stuff or anything like that. Not like I am now, but it's just kind of weird.
Very possibly. I reckon it happens quite often.
Yeah, I feel I bet everybody's experienced something that they can't explain and they just kind of push it off to the side and just forget about it because it may only happen once.
Well, yeah, and it might be that they see something on TV or hear someone else talking about it and they say, "Oh, hang on, something very similar that happened to me."
Yeah, that's kind of what happened to me. I kind of pushed it off to the side.
And what did your parents say when you told them about what happened?
They both told me that there's just things in this world that we can't explain yet. You know, they believe me, but I have had somebody tell me that that was stupid, what I said was stupid, and I'm like, okay. And that kind of made me not want to talk about it ever again.
It sounds like this person is stupid.
Yeah,
you should have said you're stupid. You have a very closed mind.
yeah, I really think that if people open their minds more, we would be able to get to the point where we'd be able to develop this type of technology. We need to think outside the box, you know?
I tell people, generally when people react in this certain way, it's simply because they've just never had anything that's from a different realm, which is out of the ordinary, not from this reality, So mm-hmm. it's difficult to people to kind of comprehend something which is, I suppose, alien, completely alien to them.
Yeah. Literally.
Literally. That is great, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This is awesome. It's awesome to have a platform to share this and get the answers,
I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that. It's interesting. We're really glad that you're getting back on your feet again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Good stuff. No worries, Nick. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Thank you for joining us tonight, Wolfgang.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Calling from Portland, Oregon, in the shadow of Mount Hood.
Yes, and the shadow that used to be Mount St. Helens.
A lovely part of the world.
Yeah.
Now, Wolfgang, you have several experiences to share with our listeners tonight, beginning at a very early age. Would you like to begin there, please, for us, Wolfgang?
Sure. So my earliest memory, I'm being babysat. I'm 4 or 5 years old. In the house that I lived in, and I have an inflatable brontosaurus, probably 3 or 4 feet tall, And its name is Pepper. For some reason, I know this in this memory. And whoever's babysitting me, this guy that I don't have any other memory of, puts me to bed, tucks me in, and then I wake up the next morning, and my dinosaur is totally deflated, right outside of, like, next to the door and to the closet, and it's totally deflated, and that's the memory. So this experience isn't a memory, it's a memory of a memory, because when I was like 8 or 9, I was riding back from one of my mom's friends with her, and I was in the passenger seat, and we drove past that house that we lived in when I was young. My mom pointed it out, and I looked at the house, and I had this intense memory of that night I'm talking about, like a face in my window of, I mean, a gray alien. I've heard a lot of other people say at this age too, so it's really crazy, and that's one of the reasons that I called. And that's it, though. My memory is of me being 8 years old, driving by the house, having the memory, and crying, and telling my mom all of that. But as far as my own conscious memory, I mean, to me, that night was just getting tucked in, the dinosaur being inflated and then deflated the next morning. Okay. So that's that. And then anything else in my childhood, I guess I could start out with my Uncle Dewey. He lived down in Crescent Valley, Nevada, which was like a 10 or 12 hour road trip ride that my dad, my mom, and my little sister took all through my childhood. And Dewey is the husband of my mom's sister. And every night before we'd leave, all of the years, and we probably went 8 or 9 times in my childhood, from a young age all the way up to 14. Every night before we'd go on that trip, I'd have a dream about a wolf in the desert following it. And that's pretty much it. The last time that we ever made that trip, basically, the dream was I'm following the wolf. This is when I'm like 13 or 14. Just like every other time, I'm following the wolf through the desert, and it leads me up a hill. And at the top of the hill, my Uncle Dewey, Dwayne, is in a chair, and the chair is on fire. And we visited. I think our normal visit was just a few days, came back, and then it was about a week or two later after we got back from visiting them. That time, my Uncle Dewey came home from work. He worked in a silver mine down there, and he had a trailer out back that he would go to, because he came back at a time where he would wake up the kids and he needed to unwind, I think. And he had his little trailer that he would go to behind the house. Well, apparently he threw a cigarette out, fell asleep, and the trailer burned down and my Uncle Dewey died. I had that dream, And so then, I mean, when we went back for the funeral and everything, like, I didn't have the dream ever again. But the last time that I saw him alive, I had the dream of seeing him up there. And there's some weird circumstances around that, too, that a lot of my family members have talked about as to what, a lot of questions about that death, but that I don't really want to, like, bring up or anything. But the first episode I listened to of your show, Nick, was the demon dog, and I think there were some things going on in that town just similar to what she described. All right, the next thing from my childhood is my dad's sister has a daughter, Portia, and she's probably 10 or 11 years older than me, and her and my mom are like really good friends, and she comes and visits and stays all the time. And on one of these trips, when I was like in fourth or fifth grade, she was down there, and we were playing, I think she's probably like 18 or something. She's older, but she's hanging out with me, my sister, and maybe one of my other cousins, but we're playing with the magic eight ball, and we're like passing it around, asking it questions. And for whatever reason, I ask it, will my cousin Portia die in the next 3 days? And it says, it is decidedly so, And I have no idea why I asked that question, but like, she went back, and she lived on the Oregon coast, and it was just like, 2 days later, My friend was staying the night with me, and we had plans the next morning. He had go-karts, and his dad and my dad and the two of us were going to go ride him the next day. And we got up that morning, and we were about to go, and then I saw my dad get off the phone and talk to my mom, and then she broke down crying. And yeah, like my cousin Portia, she got in a car with a friend in the middle of the night just for like a joyride. And went off the road and hit a tree. And they said that she left finger indentations in the dashboard. And she died, you know. And I had asked that question. And it's just really weird. I don't know why I would ask that. But it happened. And the only other things from my childhood that I would really say is just that I've heard a lot of people talk about the communion book and some people being like that the face looks wicked and some people saying that the face is so peaceful. To me, it was devastatingly scary. Every time I saw it, it was at my mom's friend, Bill and Susan's house. They had it on their table and I would walk by and look at it and just, it was just awful. And the only other time that I saw anything like it was when I got older and I saw, depictions of the Baphomet, like the famous ones, like the as above, so below, yeah, goat headed, like in the wickedness that, and it was the same. I got that same feeling, but yeah. So the only other thing in my childhood was the fire at my house. My parents were helping some of their friends move, and I had come home from school, and they were already over there helping them move, and my little sister was with them, and I was at home from the time school got out. Up until probably like 9 p.m. Just there with my dog and my cat. My dog, she's half wolf, half Malamute, beautiful. And then my cat, you know, who lived for 20 years, was some definitely like spirit guide in my life, you know, that was a really cool cat. They call me, my parents call me probably like 8 o'clock, and they're like, we're over at Sabrina and Dion's house. We're helping them move and we're going to stay the night. We're going to help them through the night. Do you want us to come back and get you, or do you want to just stay at the house? And I was old enough, you know, I think I was like 12. This is around like 6th or 7th grade, so 12 or 13. And I've got the dog and, you know, and I told him that I would stay. No, I'll stay, you know, because I didn't really want to go over there. I didn't exactly like the kids that I had to play with when I don't know what. And I went over to the kitchen, grabbed my mom's yearbook. Right next to the space heater. I looked at it for whatever reason that night for 15 minutes. And then I called back and told them, no, come pick me up. So they did. And the next morning, we got home at like 7 a.m. And we came home to a fire truck and an ambulance and a bunch of stuff in our driveway. And the middle of our house gone, like still smoking. And the paper boy or girl, I don't remember, rolled up to our house at like 4:30 or 5 in the morning, saw smoke coming out, called the cops or the 911, whatever. And they got there and searched for us. We weren't there, obviously. And what they said was that space heater that I had grabbed the yearbook from that was right next to it, it was like an old wiring thing or something, and that it sparked and it originated there. And that it smoked for like 6 hours through the night. Because when we went into the house, everything was black. The fish tank, like everything, like every nook and cranny. And they said that had we been in there and we were sleeping, you know, that we probably would have inhaled that, you know, and never even woken up. But just that one night, none of us were there. And I almost was there, but for whatever reason, I wasn't. Yeah. And so then the next period that I would jump to would just be between the ages of like 21 and 26. None of this stuff ever really like bothered me. I was happy in school. I was a very smart kid, you know, whatever. When I was about 16 or 17, I just started I don't know what was wrong with me, but I was just like partying all the time. And I didn't care about anything. I had a really hard time for a long time until I turned 27. But in the years leading up to that, a lot of things happened. So, and I was on a path of trying to find the truth. For whatever reason, there's some truth that I was trying to figure out. And so the first thing of that period was just being tipped off to some things. You know, I joined a joined a church for a while, trying to investigate and maybe even help myself a little bit. At that time, my mom, this is 2008, she's about to go to Arizona for a family reunion. And I have a dream about my mom in a truck, a blue truck, and she's in the middle. It's like an older truck, and it's a bench seat, and that's all the only seating in the truck. She's in the middle, somebody in the passenger window and driving. They drop something. They like, my mom reaches down, and the driver reaches down, and they drive off the road, and that's the whole dream. I decided I needed to tell my mom because I saw her like the next day or maybe 2 days later. I got in her car. We were meeting up for probably a talk about how I need to get things together, you know, because I was just having such a hard time at this period of my life. But I was like, Mom, I had a dream about you last night that you got in a blue truck when you go to Arizona and it like goes off the road or whatever. And she was like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even know anybody there that has a blue truck. You're probably honing in on something about your dad or something, but I don't know what you're talking about, you know, like really, really pretty dismissive. And I don't even know why I felt so compelled to say it. You know, I mean, I have a lot of dreams, but I did. As I don't know, she came back, and it wasn't like till 3 weeks later that she was like, when I went to Arizona, when I left the reunion, my cousin offered me a ride. And I walked up to his car, and it was a blue truck. And then she said to him and whoever else there was there, she said, you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but my son told me not to get in the blue truck when I come to Arizona. So I'm going to find another ride. And I mean, nothing happened. Those people are fine, apparently. So it's like one of those things. I feel like maybe had she been in there, you know, there would have been a different circumstance or whatever, but it was confirmed that, you know, there was a blue truck that she was going to get in when she went to Arizona. So in that period of time, I'm having a hard time. I'm causing issues with my mom and my stepdad, cause I have no direction and I'm just all over the place. And so my mom calls my dad, they're divorced and he lives down on the Oregon coast. And so then he comes up to get me, take me down there. I'm going to work construction with him. All of his friends are fishermen. We're possibly going to go work on the boat, work in the cranberry bog for Ocean Spray, working and make some cranberries, whatever, you know, straighten me out. And so I go down there. First night we get there, we stay at my cousin's wife's place. My cousin Ryan, his wife, she has a place up the hill. There's not any other houses up there in the woods. Like, this whole town is just very small, right next to the ocean, wooded area. And the first night that we get there, I take the couch. The couch is right next to this big, I don't know, like big window that takes up the whole area of the couch and goes up. And so when you're laying on the couch on your back, the window's to my right. It's just a big window. I wake up, I don't know, in the middle of the night or early that morning, and I open my eyes, and up above the tree line, because there's trees like all there around the house, and the trees are probably 70, 80 feet. Above that, probably 50 feet, is one light and another light that looks like it's another 30 to 50 feet above it. They're both in that position. And then the lower one raises up to the level of the top one. And then as soon as it hits the level of the top one, they both just rise slowly for like a second, but then super fast by the second. The dog that was laying next to me was awake too. And it was just had its arms folded and it was looking at me and it was like looking up there too. Then the third night, this is my closest encounter of anything that I can remember consciously, because even some of these memories I have a hard time connecting with, as like I'm so dissociated. The third night, so my dad goes and gets a fifth wheel trailer that him and I are going to stay in while we're working, put it on a lot. And I've got the bed area. He stays on the couch. He's got some girlfriend he goes and stays with a lot of nights, whatever, you know, but it's a place for me to stay mostly. up above where I lay down the bed, there's like in school buses, like the emergency hatch that you release if you go underwater, that they teach you, you know, there's one of those right above my head in this fifth wheel trailer. Third night, I wake up in the morning, and the second that I open my eyes, I have this flash memory, and there's that hatch above me opens, and this thing comes, reaches down, pulls me up, and that's it. And it's like this flash memory. And the thing is, like, I would describe it as a tall, lanky, gray, but like not, it's not small. It's like from the way that I feel like its arm was so long, it would have had to been like 7 feet or something. And it had like more, had cheekbones, and it was expressive, but it was just like this flash memory. And it was just like, whoa, but the only physical thing was that hatch is open and it's gone. Where there was a closed hatch when I went to sleep, now there is no hatch, and it's not outside, and it's not pulled off and on top of the fifth wheel either. There's just no, and for the rest of the time that I was there, there was no hatch. We put some like saran wrap over it, and I don't remember anything, but it was just that flash memory. And the only other thing that I've seen like that is I watched something on the History Channel or something. This lady was telling her story about how she woke up, had a flash memory of being taken from her fingers going across the blades of one of her ceiling fan, and then that was it. But then she woke up and got on a ladder, and she saw that her fingerprints were on the blade, and that there was a dust finger trail, you know, and that was just like me, because the hatch that was there was no longer there. And I stayed there for another couple of months. During that stay, we had moved the trailer over to one of my dad's friends, because like I said, all these guys are like fishermen, pretty wild guys, you know, outdoorsy men. I mean, my dad is, my uncles, he's got like five brothers and all my cousins. I mean, so we're staying on another one of my dad's friends' property. I get up in the middle of the night out of that same trailer, but now it's next to a house. And I've got to pee, and I usually just go right outside. I do that, walk down the three steps outside of the trailer. The house is at my back, the trailer's at my back, and in front of me is all this wooded area. The ocean is like probably 300, 400 yards ahead of me, and there's all this wooded area up here, and then there's a drop-off that goes down to the beach, and I'm peeing, and I'm looking down, but as I look up, there's something 30 to 50 feet at 2 o'clock. It's like darker than the black. Its head looks so big, like, and it walks to 12 o'clock and I'm still peeing, and I see its head turn, but I can't make out anything. It's just this figure, and I see it stop and its head turn. And when I lock eyes with it, even though I can't see it, I just see a black mass. My blood runs cold. The urine stops immediately, the stream, and I'm frozen. And I'm terrified, and I just make a split decision. I turn around, run up the steps, slam the door, get back in my bed. The next morning, I mean, I came into the kitchen. There's about six or eight of these, my dad's friends, these guys, making breakfast. It's a standard thing. Get up, go in there, get some breakfast, go to work, whatever the work is that day. And I guess my Uncle Dan noticed. He was just like, Jesus, what is wrong with you? And I guess I looked shook, because I was. I told him what I saw. And they were like, oh, well, you probably saw Junior, you know, and that's the guy, I guess, that used to own it, like a relative of one of them. And they say that they've like seen his sleeve in the kitchen window and stuff like that. And they said that, but I don't think that's what it was. And the reason I say that is I didn't even remember this until I was listening to the podcast. And I don't know what, but they had this other friend He's one of these men that just looks like a wild animal, and he has devil horns tattooed on his forehead. He's got this long hair and this like big goatee, and he's just a low brow. He's just wild dude. And he comes over there about an hour later. My Uncle Dan says, "Hey, Jonas saw Junior last night." And then the guy that I'm talking about with like the horn tattoos, he turns and looks at me and he's like, "Oh yeah." And in that moment, I knew that what I saw was him, and he knew that I knew. As soon as we like, I don't know what to describe it as, but that guy was something else. And I listened to something about like the guy in the plaid jacket on your podcast, and it's something like that. That guy, it was like, I knew as soon as he looked at me that what I saw was him, but not the way he was there. But, yeah, that is the strong impression that I got from that. So I ended up leaving down there, came back to Portland, and I was involved with like this church, and this friend of mine let me stay with him. He set me up down in, the basement of his house. There's like three or four other bedrooms down there. One of the first nights I was there, I was in the room that he had put me in, and I came to probably only like an hour after I had fallen asleep, and I saw him walk up to the threshold of the door, look at me, check on me, kind of smile, and turn around and walk away. And then the next day, I was like, "Dude, I saw you come check on me last night." He's like, "Well, what are you talking about? Last night you came and you walked up and you like checked on me, you know?" And he's like, "No, I didn't." And he's like the nicest guy. I think so fondly of this guy. He's like the most like righteous, not self-righteous, but he's just like this honest, cool guy, you know? And he's like, "No, I didn't. I was doing this and that and that and this, you know?" "Oh, I swear, man, I saw you." And then he got a look in his eye and he's like, "You know what, man? I think you saw my brother." And I was like, "What do you mean?" So Jeff had a brother. He had like five brothers, but one of his brothers killed us. And that's the brother he was talking about. He's like, "You know, I think sometimes he's just still around, you know?" And he was just like totally cool about it, you know? No, he's like I said, he's a cool guy. He was just totally nonchalant about it, which leads me to the next story of New Year's Eve 2008 going into 9. I'm with like 20 people, a few guys, a few girls. It's the end of the night of New Year's Eve. I'm sitting on the couch. On the couch next to me is my friend Cade. In front of me, across the table, my friend Dan and another friend like Tom or whatever. He's over here to the left. And it's the end of the night and we're kind of just like playing cards, talking. And as I'm sitting on the couch, Dan's right across from me, sitting in a chair. And then it kind of winds down. We go, everybody like disperses. I sleep on the couch. My friend sleeps on the couch next to me. My back's against a window. And then we're in an L and he's on the couch in the L right there. I wake up in the middle of the night and all the lights are off and everything. But there's a little bit of light coming in and I see that Dan is sitting here again in the chair right in front of me, in front of the couch, across the table, which is just a coffee table. And he's sitting there, but it's dark and I can barely see him, but he's there. I'm like, Dan. And it's just dead silent. There's no response. And I'm just like, Dan. And then I go to turn my head. And like, because I don't know why, I was getting kind of freaked out to shake Cade and he doesn't like wake up. And I look back and then it's just the chair. But just then it was like the figure of like a head and shoulders at, you know, 3 or 4 feet like you are when you're sitting down right there. And so I'm kind of freaked out. And so I get up and I go and turn on the living room light. You know, and I go and walk to the bathroom and turn on the light, and I turn on the light in the little room right next to the living room. And I come back out and I wake Kate up. And I'm like, dude, Kate, wake up, man. I was freaked out. And I told him what I just told you. And he nonchalantly looks at me and he goes, oh, you saw Brandon. I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, dude, it was Brandon. And he was like looking at me with just this like look of like, he was felt sorry for me, but it was funny to him that I had seen it too, because he proceeded to tell me that he's had a bunch of friends see his little brother, his twin brother who died when they were little. And he was like, yeah, he follows me around. And then that freaked me out more, because I was like, it wasn't somebody sitting there. It was just the height was the same as Dan sitting there. And I mean, I saw it. There was somebody there. I couldn't stay there anymore. Like, we turned on the lights, and it was probably like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I walked. I got up and I left, and I walked to where I was staying, like a mile away or something like that. And yeah, that was that incident.
Telepath is a weekly digital newsletter filled with the latest paranormal news, trending topics, and fresh articles from some of the most popular critical thinkers in the community today. Stay informed on your favorite paranormal podcasts and live streaming talk shows. Interact with the Telepath and upload your paranormal story or pics. It could be featured in an upcoming edition. Sign up right now for the free Telepath newsletter at paranormal.radio. That's paranormal.radio.
At that time, I had 3 people suffer horrible accidents in front of me. I was standing on the corner downtown Portland, walking to the library, and I took 2 steps across the crosswalk. And across the crosswalk from me, I saw this guy's eyes get big, and he goes, "No!" And it like started to turn into slow motion, and I turned around over my shoulder, and this lady is falling headfirst from the parking garage and hits right where I was just standing. And I run over there, and it's kind of gruesome, but her eye was hanging out, and there was blood coming from like every orifice of her face. And I saw an air bubble go through her blood coming out of her mouth. And I was standing right over her when she went. And not 2 weeks later, I'm downtown, and it's the summer. I get a tap on my shoulder, and this guy has a slice from one ear all the way to his jugular, and there's stuff hanging out, and he's holding it, and he's like, "Please help me." And I'm like, "We have to call 911. And he's like, "Please, no, no, no." I'm just like, "I've got a warrant." My shirt off, and I tie it around his neck to like try to, you know, stop the bleeding and put some pressure on it. And he hands me his phone to call his mom, and I call his mom, and I'm trying to help him, you know. And then I get him onto a MAX train to the next stop where he's going to meet her. And then only a week after that, a lady was going down the street next to me on a bicycle, and somebody in a car turned into her and sucked her under the car. And I was right there, and I ended up pulling her from under the car, and her leg was broken. So that all that stuff, just all of those things happened in that time of my life. And I don't know, man. It's just, it wasn't much longer after that that I guess the final part of that was, I was sitting out in the park outside of my house where I lived with my girlfriend at the time. And this guy that I had seen that lived in my building, he was always in headphones walking around Portland. And he, like, almost sounding like he was preaching. And this guy, he's like Hollywood good looking. I mean, he's got like these big eyes that are like bluer than anything. And, you know, he looks like he's from another world, you know. And he walks up to me this night, and he's like, "Hey, man, you look like a rapper." I'm like, "Oh, I'm not. You know, I play some music. I'm not a rapper." He's like, "No, you just look like someone who could be, you know, and he's like, "Why don't you come with me?" He takes me up to his apartment, and he starts talking about all of these things that like I've thought about things that I've touched on in research. He tells me that the key is to blow up the moon. He says the moon is the influence that is keeping us down. And he's like, that is what has to be done, he says. And he was so serious, you know, and he like described like some of these like moon matrix things that I heard, you know, 10 years later. And I never saw him again either. Like after that night, he made this necklace for me. He wrapped it in tweed. It had a lion's head and he gave it to me. And that was it. I never heard or saw that guy again. And shortly after all of that stuff, like everything just clicked. My life came together and I've been doing, you know, well, really well since. And it's just like all those years between 20 and 27, there's just a ton of stuff going on that I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things I didn't touch on, just dreams of, I mean, my worst nightmare, like recurring nightmare, is always two figures standing over me and I'm being stretched like a rubber band, like infinitely, like through time. And they're just arguing and I can't hear anything. I just see these two figures arguing. And that stopped after that time in my life too. I don't know, man. And like I said, things are really good now and I don't have like any more experiences really to talk about. The only other one is recent is when my grandma died. She had given me a necklace that had a crystal on it and she made it a point. She said, I want you to put this in the dash of your car off your rear view mirror. So I did. And then the day that she was dying, I left work early because I had a feeling about her and I was going to drive to the hospital because I had just seen her 2 days before. And when I'm driving down 84 to get there, the sun's hitting this crystal just right. And I've never seen it like this. Like all the lights, the prism coming through was just hitting me and sparkling all around in my car. And I knew that she was dying right then. And by the time I got up there, she wasn't at the hospital. She hadn't made it. They had turned around and taken her back. And then my sister called before, you know, grandma died, get to mom's house. And I did. And a week before that, I had a dream that it started out as a black cat. And then it was the black cat's eyes. The black cat's eyes to my grandma. And then I was a 5-year-old child. Holding my grandma, hugging her the way that you would when you're 5 at her legs. And a time lapse of me growing up. And I'm still holding her, you know, all the way up to adulthood. And then, you know, the dream's pretty much done. And then, you know, a week later, that thing happened and she died. Yeah, man. I think I touched on most of the stuff that was important to say. And I don't even know how. Like I said, it's really hard to identify with this stuff. But I know that it happened and that it happened to me. But it's when I listened to the Lovelace episodes. And he talked about like they were going to put him in regression without like him wanting that. I personally felt like I wanted to kick and scream. And I just think that maybe I have some block that I don't ever want to go to regression. And I think, I mean, I feel brave, feel like I've got courage. I've gone through a lot of things, but then I was like, yeah, that's probably it. That's probably why, man. I don't want to know. If there's more to know than all of that, I don't think I do. Even though I'm totally open and I know that the world is so much more than we think or that we're told, at least at this point.
Sometimes it can be liberating. Other times, you know, yeah, you can open up a can of worms. So when was the last time you had a dream? Because it's kind of like precognition, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And the last one was my grandma, like I said, with the black cat dream. And so that was a couple years. I mean, she died in 2018 of September. So, yeah.
It's not uncommon to have these kind of dreams, especially with people, you know, you're close to.
Right. Yeah. And that's every single one, somebody I'm close to.
Exactly. Like Uncle Dewey.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was this experience you had in Chinatown?
Oh my God. So that was at the time, in that kind of weird time in my early 20s, I was with my girlfriend at that time. And we're down in Chinatown at the House of Louis. Anybody in Portland, you know what I'm talking about. And in House of Louis, there's like this wall of mirrors So it looks like it's double the size. I'm in there with my girlfriend at the time, her mom, and her little brother, and I'm eating and with my head, you know, down in the plate. And I kind of lift my head a little bit, raise my eyes, and I guess it's important to say that it was late, and it was only, we were the only ones in there, and the kitchen, the wait staff, we were the only ones in there. So it was probably, I don't know, maybe night or whatever. But as I lifted my eyes, out of the corner of my eye, that wall of mirrors, that whole place was full of people. And like, thinking about it now, I feel the exact same way I did then. Just like ultimate chill running through me. And like I said, it was just full of people. And like, I didn't turn my head to look, but it, because it felt like they were all like looking in my direction. So I didn't want to like see it if they were. So like my mind's eye, you know, just the thought of that is really freaky. But yeah. And then I did look up. My girlfriend at the time was across from me. Breathe out, look across, look at the mirror. And it's just us. But like in that second or two that I was like in between my plate and her, that mirror was reflecting a crowded restaurant. So yeah, that's the Chinatown experience. And dude, that Shanghai and all that stuff that's, you know, down here in Portland, I mean, it's kind of famous for that. And, you know, I just imagine that it was probably just some of those people, you know, still around down there.
Sure, that's what they used to do, wouldn't it? They used to have those trap doors, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they were sending people to work through those. I've never done the tours or anything, but yeah, it's just a certain feel. You mean you can kind of feel it down there for sure.
Yeah, because it's a very old city, isn't it?
Yeah, they were the toss up was either call it New Boston or Portland, and it just landed on Portland. But yeah, pretty old, and it was founded by some people, Burnside, and a lot of our streets are named after the founders, and it's pretty cool. It's got a long history. So yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to make it one day.
That was good, man. My heart's racing. You know, this hearing everything is really awesome. And that's kind of why I just wanted, if anybody hears anything, one thing out of my story, because I've heard things that none of mine really have any confirmation from anybody. You know, it's just me, only the dreams and my mom confirming the truck in Arizona. You know, everything else is just me, you know. And so, but I've heard things that people have said that I'm like, okay, I've experienced something like that, you know? So that's what this is about for sure, is like, and I hope that one person just hears something that helps them like reconcile something that they need to with an experience in these kind of topics, you know?
That's what it's all about. People do listen. They do connect different experiences, even small occurrences. You know, there's always someone that will connect saying, oh, that's what happened to me. I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure a lot of people have, you know, very similar dreams and they try second guessing themselves. But when there's a particular outcome, you know, it does turn out to be true, then, you know, there's a lot to it.
Yeah. And each time, once did I even need to tell anybody, my mom, and I was compelled. So it's like, I don't even feel worried about it because I do have a lot of dreams. Oh, and sleep paralysis, I have all the time. I don't experience beings though. I just experience, I'm conscious and I can't move, and I have it twice a week. And sometimes I experience different realities though. The other day I was in sleep paralysis and I heard my current girlfriend talking to the kids, you know, and I was just trying to move and I was awake. And then I asked her about the conversation. She's like, no, that conversation didn't happen. And I've also, sometimes when I'm in sleep paralysis, I think that I'm standing up and falling and hitting the walls and stuff. But I'm actually not. I'm just still in the bed, but awake, and I can't get up. But yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it can be quite scary, that. I mean, I haven't sleep paralysis episode maybe 7-8 years.
Uh-huh.
I seem to have really thinned out now, you know, which is a good thing because it can be quite scary.
Yeah, that's good, man.
The devil horn guy. The one with the tattoos.
Yeah.
And you reckon he actually, you know, recognized you? And
dude, I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, but I mean, I was convinced from the second that my dad was like, Jonas saw Junior last night, and he was like, oh yeah, and he looked me in the eye. Dude, I don't know what it is, but I was like, dude, that was him. He knows I saw something last night. What I saw was him. But I don't know, dude. But this guy was big. I mean, I'm 6'3", and I'm like 240, and when I'm fit, I'm 212. And he's probably like my height, you know, he's a big guy too. Like I said, he has this long ponytail and big old like goatee and the tattoo on his sick low brow man, you know, fisherman. But he's just, he's, I don't know, man. He just had like a sort of energy to him. And yeah, like I said, man, what I just, the way that I felt and I still feel was that like he knew that I saw something when Dan didn't need to say that to me. He was like, he was sitting there, like somebody be sitting there with their arms crossed, looking at you, waiting for you to acknowledge this thing that they know that you know, or something, you know, almost like a cop would like have you figured out and they're waiting for you to confess, you know. It's like all of that mixed together. It's just, I feel like that was him. And I don't know what he was or what, but, and I don't want to say like the whole thing, but like I said, what the man in the red plaid, the human prints turning to hooves, something like that. That guy had some supernatural thing going on.
Maybe he did pop out of his body.
Maybe.
Looks like he probably didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
And he got spotted.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's great, man. It is great to talk to you.
You too, man. Stay safe.
Stay safe and keep in contact as well. All right.
Sure. All right, man. Thank you.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you would like to get involved with the podcast, I am currently looking for moderators to help with the Facebook group. If you're interested, send me a message. And if you or a family member has had an encounter and would like to share, email me at the usual address, ufochronicles@gmail.com. Or visit the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. Big thank you to Nick and Wolfgang for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week with more encounters. So till then, my friends, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.